Welcome into the 9 o'clock hour. Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you for another hour. Weeknights here, 6 to 10 on 92.9 The Game. We'll get back into the Falcons talk. Appreciate everybody who called in. We are rolling tonight on this topic about Michael Penix Jr., the OC and the HC. So I'll make sure we get more of your calls in before I get out of here at 404-726-0929. But before we do that, I did want to talk some college ball today because we do have a huge game coming up here in Athens this weekend, plus a lot of other headlines to get to. So let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in Joe DeLeon of A to Z Sports, college writer and host there. Joe, how worried, maybe worried isn't even the right word, but how seriously should Georgia be taking Alabama this weekend after Ty Simpson has sort of gotten this offense back on track the last couple of weeks?
Well, I definitely think that they need to take them seriously because the rivalry and the history between these two teams that have built up in recent years, especially what happened last year, it's definitely important to take this game seriously. But I will say we got to contextualize the performances that Ty Simpson has had and who they have faced. We got to remember the struggles that they showed in week one against Florida State. Now, I know a lot of teams, week one, you're going to bounce back. You're going to be able to improve on some issues. I think that those problems they had in protecting Simpson and having issues running the ball in that game are going to show up in this game against Georgia. And it's a big reason why I'm pushing the Bulldogs to win this game and to cover the 2.5-point spread that's out there right now.
The other big game of the weekend, obviously, Penn State and Oregon. Penn State really getting its first test. Seems like Oregon is a well-oiled machine right now. What do you think happens in this one?
This one, admittedly, I've had like a really tough time getting a good pulse on it. And the big driving force is because I don't know for certain what narrative is the most correct on either team. And what I mean by this is you got Penn State, who's tremendous on defense, but Drew Aller has been erratic and inconsistent. He has not stepped up to the way that we thought that he will. But is that true? Or is this Andy Kotelnicki holding back the offense and not really opening things up, and the lights come on in the whiteout game at night in Happy Valley, and he goes and really flashes and plays to his potential? Which version do we get? And on Oregon's side, they've been so darn impressive. They have smoked everybody that they've played. They've done it effortlessly and with such ease. But are they just like Tennessee was at the beginning of the year last year? Are they a team that's blowing their way through their beginning schedule, but the minute that they're tested, are they going to start to struggle? I do think if I were to determine the direction of this game, I do have a lot more faith in Dante Moore and this Oregon squad. I think if it comes down to a final drive for each quarterback, I'm going to trust Dante Moore a little bit more. As much as Aller's more experienced, I feel like we have so much evidence of the times that he has failed in those late game situations compared to Moore, who is starting to ascend into one of the best quarterbacks in college football. So I'm taking Oregon in this, but either direction and outcome wouldn't surprise me.
Can Oklahoma weather the storm without Mateer?
That's a great question. And I think that the better way of framing this is we're going to really learn how good Oklahoma is without him. And I know that Hawkins steps in after he played a little bit last year, and he did some nice stuff, but he was up and down as a youngster and at least showed that at some point he could take over maybe next year. But the way that we're going to figure out if this team is legit is if their defense can pick up the slack, if their offense is problem, and if Ben Arbuckle is as brilliant of an offensive mind as he is, or if he's riding off of Mateer's skill set. I have been very wary about how good this Oklahoma offense is, because their offensive line, I think, is really poor. And I think that Mateer makes them look better. It kind of reminds me of when Caleb Williams won the Heisman a couple of years ago. USC's offensive line was really bad, but Caleb Williams was really tremendous at improvising. So their sack statistics, pressure statistics, it didn't look bad that year. Except when we watched the film, we saw him running for his life quite a bit. The same thing applies here for Mateer. Without him, are they going to be able to scheme things and get creative with getting Satania and Deion Burks the football, or are they going to get completely stonewalled and they're going to have to hope that their defense can punch their way out of a close game, especially against Texas?
What's going on with LSU's offense?
I believe that the biggest issue with that, and if you ask anyone associated with LSU, is Nussmeier has been banged up. That is what Brian Kelly has said, that he has had an abdominal issue, I believe was what it was. And he's now starting to get fully healthy. And now as he's starting to play better, which he looks great against Southeastern Louisiana, albeit an FCS opponent, if he is going to get closer to what his actual ceiling is and he can look as decisive as he did against Clemson, they will get back in stride. I do think part of this, we need to see Joe Sloan, the offensive coordinator, do a more deliberate job of scheming more effective run plays. I feel like there's just generally not been a lot of creativity from him at running the football, and he abandoned it way too quickly. So if they can get a better job of getting Caden Durham the ball and out in space, and Nussmeier's alleged injury ends up healing up, I think that they're going to hit their stride.
What do you make of Carson Beck's season so far? Miami's 4-0, number two in the AP top 25, but I feel like he hasn't even really scratched the surface of the potential of that offense, and it seems like they've been in a couple of tight games that maybe they shouldn't have been.
Well, I think that he's really flashed what he's capable of doing, and this offense has really shown that they don't need him to do everything. I felt like last year when he was with Georgia, he didn't need to do everything, but he and Bobo felt like that was the case for some reason. And it led to a lot of hero ball. It led to a lot of him taking shots that didn't need to be taken. You eventually hear from Carson Beck at ACC Media Days reflecting and being very personally aware of, hey, I got to be better about that. I don't need to go for the home run every single time. And I think we're starting to see that now. I think we're starting to see, especially in the Florida game, they get to lean on the three deep running back room that they have with Marty Brown and Fletcher and Lyle. They've got so many different guys that they can turn to that run super hard that when he's not playing well, they can still win and they can still prevail. I think some of the big time throws that he made against Notre Dame and against USF that he eventually, as the season progresses, he can help this team win in late game situations. The only thing, and why you said he's only really scratching the surface, I do wonder how healthy his elbow is. It is very complicated to recover from the injury that he suffered, baseball-like injury, trying to get velocity back on your ball. I wonder if this is going to be something where maybe at the end of the year we start to see the normal version of Carson Beck as he's been getting more and more healthy.
Talking all things college ball with our buddy Joe DeLeon. Check him out, A2Z Sports. Which team is more able to bounce back, Clemson or Notre Dame?
Oh, it's going to be Notre Dame. I think Clemson's cooked. I think that this Clemson team is completely sold out, especially after the way that they played against Syracuse. They look like they could care less. They looked completely directionless against the Syracuse team at home that they should have smoked. Barely showed up. And on Notre Dame's side, there's buy-in. The team that they have, the young core on offense of playmakers and their new offensive line, it's finding its stride. They have shown some big playability, and C.J. Carr has delivered us flashes of what he's eventually going to be in 2 years when he's an upperclassman. He's aggressive. He's free-thinking when they open up the offense. Their issues have more to do with really bad scheme on defense, and they've done a really poor job of getting after the quarterback and generating pressures. Chris Ash, the new defensive coordinator, has put a lot of off-zone coverage. He's not been trying to do anything to rattle opposing quarterbacks whatsoever. I think if at some point the defensive woes that they have continue to pile up, you at least have different defensive minds on that coaching staff that Marcus Freeman can turn to. Whether it's him taking over play calling, having been Notre Dame's defensive coordinator not that long ago, or going to Mickens, who's the defensive backs coach, who they considered giving the defensive coordinator job in the first place. I think that there is a lot more self-reflection that has been done and been willing to be done at Notre Dame, which we've seen over the past year more so, compared to Clemson, where Dabo Sweeney is constantly making the same mistakes over and over again.
Are you surprised Indiana's doing it again?
I'm not. I was a little surprised by how much they dominated Illinois. I thought that game was going to be a little bit closer. I thought if they were going to win confidently, it was going to be more a 14-point victory or something along those lines. But what I was confident in this offseason was that they were bringing back experience in the right positions. They didn't really lose much to the NFL draft. And they went in the portal, and instead of going and grabbing all G5 guys like they did the year before, they were able to entice a lot of big-name, premier transfer portal guys. They improved their offensive line. They rounded out their defense. But the most important aspect to this is the fact that they got Fernando Mendoza. And I think that Fernando Mendoza, at the end of the year, everybody's going to say, why didn't X team go after him? There are so many teams that are going to be kicking themselves that they weren't more aggressive about going and getting him. I really think, and I was on him as my number one quarterback in the preseason for the 2026 NFL draft, and now I'm starting to see everybody else is sprinkling him in there in these mock drafts. He is so physically gifted. He reminds me a lot of Matt Ryan. He can sling it. He's also a very underrated athlete. He's big. And we're seeing an efficiency from him as he went 21 of 23 with 5 touchdowns against Illinois. I think that everything works so, so well together that we're going to start to eventually see that this Indiana squad got better from a year ago.
Georgia Tech, is there a possibility? It looks tough because their schedule is so weak. So is there a possibility they could climb in the rankings, or are they just pretty much going to be between maybe 16 and 20 for the rest of the year?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I feel like we always see this during the season, a team that's got a lighter schedule that they just slowly trickle their way up and up and work their way up. Like Notre Dame's a really good example. Last year, they had no business climbing as quickly as they did after the Northern Illinois loss, and lo and behold, they ended up as high as they did in the final playoff ranking. I think it almost doesn't even matter, though, because the path that they have is so favorable that if they win out, or they go 11-1, they're in the ACC championship game. If you're 11-1 and you're in the ACC championship game, you're going to be one of the remaining teams, at the very least, if you don't win the ACC, to get into the college football playoff. I think as long as Brent Key, which he has shown, he is not a coach that is going to make silly mistakes because he's got such an attention to detail and they're so hard-nosed. As long as they don't slip up, they're going to be fine. The one thing that does give me a little pause, Haynes King has had inconsistencies with health, and he's already had health issues. I'm very careful about like really projecting them. I love this team, and I love Jamal Haynes, and I think that there's a lot of dynamic playmaking that can come from it. But if Haynes King goes down like we saw last year, how much does this team take a step back? How much are they able to stay at the same level without him?
They can't.
That is probably going to be the biggest thing that hurts them.
Nope, they can't. And you know what the thing is, Joe? I've been on hashtag start Philo, because he's shown you the ability to be competent. And if you're going up against NC State and you know, Virginia Tech and Duke, you don't – maybe Haynes King, you know, if you need him, he can come in and spell. But you have a guy like Philo sitting there, use him. I mean, I don't – like he – to me, Haynes King should not have played last week. I know he wants to. I know that's his identity as a quarterback. But to your point, it's almost like you got to save your bullets, Joe.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny thinking about this. It's almost like in playoff baseball, trying to reserve your best arms. And I know that doesn't really happen with quarterbacks, but you bring up a really good point. And it happened already before the Clemson game where Haynes King didn't really play because he didn't need to, because you're playing a weak opponent. I think that Philo has shown some decent ability, but there's two advantages to playing him now. You get him more exposure against the bad teams, start him against the bad teams in the remaining stretch of your schedule that you've feel confident in. He builds a little bit of confidence. You build an identity with him. And then you do have Haynes King like you're talking about. If he is as banged up as, and there hasn't really feel like there's been a lot of clarity on what exactly is plaguing him. If Haynes King's as banged up as he was after the Colorado game, there's no point in rushing him back and asking him to play now. I'd rather save him for the remaining stretch of the season and him have him play the way that he did against Georgia last year. And they knock off a team like Georgia and they maybe shock somebody in the ACC championship game, whatever it is. You're going to need Haynes King when it comes down to it.
Before I let you go, Mike Gundy's legacy, what is it to you? And does somebody who takes that job, is that A, an attractive job, and a job in which in a couple of seasons you can get them back on track?
Well, it fully depends on if Oklahoma State financially commits more than they did in the final years of Gundy. And we saw after Brent Pry was fired by Virginia Tech that they suddenly announced that there was a 47 million dollar commitment to the athletics department and in football specifically. If Oklahoma State does something similar, I think that then there is a path for them to be successful. My thing with the Gundy firing, I'm very almost pissed off about how it was handled. I get it that this team was bad and it felt like he wasn't really present as much as he's been mentally. It kind of felt like he was checked out. If you thought that he was such a bad coach, you should have given him the respect last offseason and asked him to retire and let things end. To do that to him, to fire him on a Tuesday in a game week, the way that they did with the legacy, he's one of the only coach that's willingly stuck around that hasn't jumped ship to go to a bigger and better program like Les Miles and Jimmy Johnson did. I think it's really disrespectful that they did that to them, and I'm really disappointed that they just cut ties like that after everything that he's done to keep that program relevant.
Joe, appreciate the time as always. We'll be checking you out, A to Z Sports. We'll chat soon.
Of course. Thanks as always.
All right, that is Joe DeLeon. When we get back, Zach Robinson, Raheem Morris, and Michael Penix Jr. all met the media today. I'll let you hear what they had to say coming up at the bottom of the hour. But coming up next, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com, Will McFadden, joins the program. And he was there today. What did he see? How is the vibe? What is this situation in Atlanta looking like? You don't want to miss that conversation. It's next. Right now, we got to hit the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our buddy Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, as we pick up the pieces from Sunday and try to move forward to this week at home, what were your biggest takeaways about the messaging from Coach today as he tries to guide his team after that, frankly, historic loss?
Yeah, you know, I do really believe that a lot of the work that coaches do is in diagnosing problems as they pop up, coming up with a solution, and then communicating and getting everybody on the exact same page to ultimately, hopefully, correct that solution. So really that is a long way of saying that the work for Raheem Morris and his staff kind of begins now. And so I know that a lot of fans, you know, just seeing it on social media, things like that, after a loss like that, there's probably really not much anybody can say from a podium that is going to make anybody feel better. But I do think that Raheem Morris kind of took accountability, and that has kind of echoed across the everybody that has spoken this week. You know, they have flat out said, yeah, it was frustrating the way that we played, right? Like, that's not acceptable. They have said they were outclassed. They said they were outplayed, like, kind of in every form and fashion. They've said that was nowhere near good enough. And now, and that's kind of what I got at right at the jump, is what do you do about it? So the real test to me of what Raheem Morris and his staff can kind of accomplish with this group is what is going to take place on Sunday. And then luckily, you know, this is one of the benefits of having an early bye week. It gives you a chance sometimes to get under the hood if you get off to a slow start, make some corrections, tinker around with some things, and get right back on track. So, yeah, it's going to be a big couple of weeks for Raheem Morris and his staff.
What do you make of the communication issues between Michael Penix Jr., Raheem Morris, and Zach Robinson? And do you believe that him coming down from the booth will be able to help cure those? Because it's not just, you know, not understanding some of the play calling or what have you. It's now we're getting back to the things that really made us our blood boil last year, Will, which is the burning timeouts after commercial breaks and not being able to get plays in when you have a minute and a half to do so. What have you diagnosed is really going on?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, those things can happen or shouldn't happen without a very good reason to have them happen, right? And, you know, something, if this is true, and I have no reason not to believe that it is, the communication kind of technology part of it in Carolina, that I'm a little bit more understanding of, because sometimes that just simply is out of your control. And if you're in the middle of getting a play call and you and I are talking right now and it sounds perfect and then the phone cuts out, you didn't do anything wrong, I didn't do anything wrong, but the message gets lost, and then we got to kind of figure out, you know, am I going to pretend I just heard the end of your question and I'm just going to start answering? I don't know. I got to make that choice, and the clock is ticking down. And it helps to kind of understand, I think, a little bit of what my main question was early in that game, which was like, this is a different Michael Penix Jr. than I've ever seen, where he looked like he was rushed in his reads and just very quickly going to the check down option. And if that's because there were communication breakdowns, be it due to technology, be it due to a long play call, be it due to getting it in a little bit later. Like, those last two do need to get cleaned up if that is a problem, and that is in the execution of the procedure, and that is something the coaches and players need to fix. But if you're having an issue getting it in time, everything else ripples from there, and you're kind of behind the eight ball, and that means Michael Penix is getting up to the line of scrimmage without much time to look at the defense in front of him, without maybe an option to use a motion to get a key identifier, which leads to everything being post-snap, which probably leads to, I'm going to make a safe decision, get it to number seven, and let him go to work. So you kind of see how it all does connect. So moving Zach Robinson down to the sideline, hopefully, if the worst-case scenario happens and you get a breakdown in technology, no problem. We're on the sideline. Mike, after this play, just run over. I'll put the play call in your ear, and then you can run back to the huddle, no problem. The other thing it does is just the wealth of experience Zach Robinson has, and him able to communicate that to players, be it quarterbacks, receivers, running backs, linemen, whoever, and other coaches. Like, I just think that having him there in the center of it all will benefit the offense in totality. So, I think there's a lot of reasons to make that move.
Firing Ike Hilliard as simple as through 3 weeks, wide receivers and tight ends, zero touchdowns.
I don't know if it's that simple. I think that is a little bit of maybe a symptom of, you know, what they said today. Raheem Morris saying it is definitely performance-based, which that is part of it. The Falcons also, per Next Gen Stats, have 7 drops this season. That's not all on the receivers. Some are Bijan Robinson, for example. I can picture one in the season opener in my head. But that is tied for the league lead. So I think part of it is the performance. I think part of it is the details. And when you have to communicate everything out to 11 players at once and everybody has to be on the same page while moving the exact same speed and kind of all of the nuances that go into it, if there is a breakdown, it's going to look really ugly. And I think Sunday looked pretty ugly offensively. And so you kind of can understand maybe, all right, we've got to get tighter communication, make sure everybody is where they're supposed to be and that develop that trust. So, you know, I think that all kind of ladders up to something has to change, and the passing offense has not been where we expect it to be. So I think that all kind of led to ultimately the decision.
Talking all things Falcons with insider for AtlantaFalcons.com, senior writer and editor Will McFadden here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. What do you make of the topsy-turvy performance from the special teams unit, not just the kicking game, but coverage as well? It's been another one of those things where it was great in the Vikings game, but in the other two games, kind of borderline disastrous.
Yeah, honestly, I think we're seeing a little bit of a delay in something that I thought we would see a few years ago when they kind of initially introduced the big change to the kickoff format. But we saw it kind of start out a little bit more similarly, where teams are either kind of kicking it through the back of the end zone or kicking it right to the front of the end zone. Now, however, I think you are starting to see some of the coordinators out there be like, all right, let's try some things. And you're getting these kind of like knuckleball, curveball-y kicks that the Falcons saw a lot of against Carolina. And that, I do think, is something that Marquise Williams, the special teams coordinator, is going to take a hard look at, figure out a solution for. Maybe it's moving your returners to a different location on the field. Maybe it's a different technique you're teaching them. It's a different approach, a mindset, things like that. Like, they can get that corrected. I honestly just kind of think it's a new trend we're starting to see emerge around the league. And it, you know, I think it's just going to take a little bit of time before teams fully know how to answer what we're seeing right now. But the coverage unit, you know, against Tampa, kind of that long return, there's no question that the special teams for the Falcons has been a strength in recent years. And I do actually think, you know, you think back to the Las Vegas game Monday night last year, the blocked punts, those were huge for the Falcons in that game. I do think Marquise Williams is a good coordinator who has had success here, but he does have a few kind of questions that need answering right now for his unit. They need to get answered pretty quickly.
You think we make it to Saturday, even Sunday morning, before we find out who's kicking?
I would maybe expect something that's similar to maybe this week, where a decision kind of comes Friday. Although it being a home game, you never know. They could bring it all the way up to game time. I'm trying to think through, like, what would be the strategic advantage there, or anything like that. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a real reason why you would, unless it truly is just that close of a decision. And honestly, you know, Chris, it might be at this point in time, because if there was a clear and obvious answer, that's what the Falcons would be going with. They've got to figure out the kicking game, and they are kind of bringing and looking in at everything. So if somebody really jumps out to them this week and earns that role, I would expect them to say so. If nobody does, then you're right, and maybe this does go kind of all the way up until Sunday.
You think the chatter around Kirk Cousins getting another opportunity dies down with as simple as a rebound start from Michael Penix Jr.? Because, Will, I have to be honest with you, I was stunned to even hear a single Falcon fan voice rise up and suggest it. I thought that chapter was dead and buried, and Raheem Morris said as much, Will. He's not getting a chance to be the starting quarterback, but you know that's not how fans think.
You know, I am optimistic usually when it comes to prospects on the field, but I am a pretty real and sometimes cynical when it comes to the requests that people might make of their football teams. And after, you know, growing up and kind of seeing all the ways that people were at times clamoring for Matt Schaub over Matt Ryan, nothing at this point really surprises me. It just kind of comes with the nature of, I think, the job. And, you know, in a lot of ways, what Raheem Morris said about the kicker situation a couple of weeks ago, where he was like, look, I know that there's a lot that goes into it. I'm not a kicker or a kicking coach, so I don't know all of the nuances in and out to that level. I just know if it goes in or if it doesn't, right? And that's a little bit of the way that I kind of view the way fans have this relationship with their team. It's kind of like, I don't care how it happens, just go get that win on Sunday, right? I don't care if it's Michael Penix or Kirk Cousins. I don't care what I said last year about how it happened. Like, whatever it takes to win on Sunday is what it takes. So you get a bad game from Michael Penix Jr., and I think a lot of people are like, the most recent memory I have with this is a loss, and I don't want that again, so we got to change something. And that's a big reason why they lost this game, was the quarterback play. Nobody has run from that. Michael Penix has said that. Raheem Morris has said that. Zach, like, the quarterback play has to be better. They have also said Michael Penix Jr. is our quarterback. They have no plans to make this competition. That was a one-time thing with a game very far out of hand to put a veteran on the field. You know, who knows what would have happened if for some reason, you know, points started flowing for the Falcons. Did they kind of change course? That didn't happen. So right now, Michael Penix is the quarterback moving forward. And where things remain with Kirk Cousins is where they've remained moving into this, or coming into the season. He's their backup. He's a highly capable backup and another great person to have on the sideline for Michael Penix Jr. But we've seen the highs from MPJ, so have the Falcons, and that's what they're here for. They just got to figure out a way to tap into that more often.
Before I let you go, through 3 weeks, how does the Falcon offense match up against Washington D?
Ooh, yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think that if Atlanta can run the ball, if they can get their run game rolling downhill, like, that matches up with any defense, I think, in the league. Like, the way that they can do it, and the X factor with Bijan Robinson is always going to be such kind of like a trump card to me, that if that's working, I like their chances against anybody. If you get a game where, you know, it's maybe a little bit more like Tampa or kind of like Carolina, where either by nature of kind of your game flow, you get away from that run game, or it's just simply not productive, that's where I think you could run into some problems, where they're able to disguise some of the blitzes. Frankie Louvu is able to play downhill a little bit more. Bobby Wagner's simulating and dropping back into your throwing lanes. Like, that's the game I don't think they want to be in. But this should be a close game, so they should be able to stay on game script. if they can have success on first down, I do like Atlanta to bounce back offensively in this one.
We'll appreciate the time. We'll be reading you and watching you on AtlantaFalcons.com. We'll chat soon.
Of course, Chris. Anytime.
All right. That is Will McFadden there, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Appreciate him stopping by. As always, Boots on the Ground report from a busy, busy day at Flowery Branch. When we get back, we'll let you hear from Mike Hughes, who was going to play that earlier, but so many of y'all wanted to jump on the phones. I said, we'll push that back, and we talked to you, and we did for the entire 8 o'clock hour. Appreciate everybody that checked in. By the way, it's a huge weekend in Athens with Georgia getting set to host Alabama on Saturday, and Sports Radio 92.9 The Game is going to be in the middle of all the action. Join us Friday from 2 to 6 for a special edition of Dukes and Bell from Grindhouse Killer Burgers on Lumpkin Street. We'll be locking in for Saturday's big game, along with getting the weekend started a little bit early. That's Dukes and Bell Friday from 2 to 6 at Grindhouse Killer Burgers on Lumpkin Street in Athens on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike Hughes next. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Been a really amazing show tonight. Love all the passion and the callers and everybody that's reached out at C. Thomas Radio. Again, if you missed the whole impetus for this thing, I retweeted Dan Orlovsky's viral video about the Falcons with one simple line. I said, Falcons fans, if you do one thing today, watch this video, I implore you. Well, to the tune of now 101,000 of you, you listened and you viewed this video. And we took a lot of phone calls today. The passion, the fire, the energy about Penix, about the head coach, about the OC. This was definitely one of the most favorite shows I've done so far here on Chris Thomas Tonight, and I can't wait to continue to talk Falcons with you all season long. Dukes and Bell were talking Falcons today. They got a chance to chop it up with Mike Hughes, CB2, and this was their conversation earlier today.
Mike Hughes joins us. Mm-hmm. What's up, Mike? What's going on, man?
What's going on, man? How y'all doing?
Man.
Well, I guess you just flush that tape, man. You watch that game film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most definitely. You know, that's in the past.
Right.
You know, we looking forward to this weekend and the new opportunities we got.
Wednesday, it's almost like you can't wait to get the game plan, right? I mean, to flush that.
For sure, yeah. definitely one of those type of weeks. Like I said, we just ready to get back to work. New challenge ahead and just looking forward.
You know how fans are. They're like, they're screaming, they're throwing stuff at the TV. It just seems like every team in the NFL has one of these games. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels like it's almost contagious with things. Defense pretty much took care of your business. But, I mean, is it just you feel sometimes like, oh, boy, it's going to be one of those Sundays?
You never really feel like that going into a game. But, you know, as it goes on and it got out of hand pretty bad. But, you know, nobody wants to lose by that much.
Right.
And I would say, like, I'm glad it happened early. You know, we faced some adversity early, and I think it'll give us a chance to see how we respond. And, you know, I think today was a good start off to, you know, how we're going to respond this week.
You feel like it was?
Yeah, I feel like it was good practice. You know, guys came in laser focused, you know, ready to get into the game plan. And, you know, I think it kind of that was contagious around the whole building today. So I think we got off to a good start today.
Mike, have you been involved in a game, obviously played a lot of football, where you've played in a game like this, whether it was in college? Obviously, there are lots of blowouts in college because the level of competition, sometimes you just play lesser-level teams. It's rare in the NFL that happens, right? And I think that's kind of the surprise is where everybody's like right here. I can play with anybody, and then – where our offense, you know, just had a bad day at the office. It's one of those situations where I don't know how many of those kinds of games you've been in, but what's going through your mind as the game, like Mike's talking about, it's going bad, but you still have to go out and perform. You still got to go cover guys. You still got to do your job, right?
Yeah, I mean, and especially for defense, the moment you check out into a game, you know, it gets exposed, especially playing corner. Like, you can never fall asleep, you can never get bored out there, or, you know, it's – you know, it'll get crazy out there. So, it's always a good idea to stay locked in and just try to keep competing. You know, even when it gets out of hand like that, you want to keep putting good stuff on tape and just not ending on a terrible note. You know, when you go back and look at the film, you want to see how guys are finishing and you know, responding once we get down that big. So, you know, it was a lot of guys who were out there still fighting, and you know, that's good to see. So.
Yeah. Former first-round pick, Mike Hughes with us, guys, on Dukes and Bell live inside the Ticketmaster Studios. Carl, change of tack.
Let's go back 2 weeks. How much fun was that ass whooping up in Minnesota? Conversely, what was that sideline feeling like?
Man, that was a ton of fun, bro. You know, seeing the D-line go to work and, you know, creating all those turnovers is always fun, creating turnovers and, you know, just, you know, going out there feeding off of each other.
Right.
And that's what that was the game. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about this defense, man. To be quite honest, we haven't spent a lot of time on it. Y'all are playing really good. I know the results, you know, are not there from a record standpoint, but from a defensive standpoint, you got to feel good about what you guys have been able to do. Last week, I thought we played really well, kept us in the game. Unfortunately, we didn't get the offense that we needed. But let's talk about the unit, man, and what's been going on there and the connection with everybody.
Yeah, you know, I would like to say we're a bend but don't break kind of mentality. And like I said, you know, just going out there trying to, you know, help out the offense and just trying to feed off each other. You know, it may be games where we can't, you know, get something figured out. We start a little slow, and then, you know, offensive special teams, you know, pick us up and get us going. So we want to do the same for those other phases as well. And like I said, just feeding off each other, it'll help us in the long run. So we just got to get back to that.
Yeah, and seeing the young guys, how exciting is that? I mean, you've been there to see rookies get their first interception in the league. That's got to be a great flight home.
Man, it's exciting. And then seeing them catch the pick and throw the ball somewhere, like, no, we got to get that. You know what I'm saying? We got to keep that for you, bro. Yeah. So for whatever reason, rookies always forget that, and a vet will go and get the ball and save it for them. So it's exciting to see that those type of moments as well.
Talk about Bowman and Watts two weeks ago in Minnesota.
It was great. All right, you guys get the Commanders this week. We don't know. A lot of speculation if Terry will play. Terry McLaurin obviously is a great wide receiver. But even if he does or doesn't, what do you see with that receiving core when you watch these guys on tape? We saw these guys last year. What do you think about the Commanders and that offense and what they present?
They're a pretty explosive offense. You know, those guys on the receiving end can run pretty well. You know, they all can run great routes. So and they got a QB that can get it to them. So, you know, we got our hands full. And no matter who plays, we know we still got to, you know, go out there and – you know, do our jobs and go with the game plan the coaches put together for us. So that's what we're focusing on right now.
We got a bye week coming up. I mean, is it as a pro, does it matter? I mean, everyone gets aches and pains. Would you prefer this bye week come later? Or we got some guys that are banged up right now, so maybe this is the right time.
Honestly, I prefer it come later. But okay. With it being this early, we can still use it to our advantage.
Right.
And however that looks, we'll see next week. But I would definitely rather have it later.
Yeah, and this trip overseas, man, I know it's down the road, but you like that stuff? I don't know. Some players are like, man, I wish you didn't have to go. You know, it's because we were just talking about the Steelers are going over to Dublin this weekend. It starts that international process. Mm-hmm. You have any thoughts on, you know, I mean, we're going, but you like that kind of thing, or what's the deal with
it? Honestly, I think it's pretty unique. And I took German in high school.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
So okay. I think it's going to be pretty cool for me to go over there and kind of, you know, see how that side of the world works. But, honestly, I think it's a blessing, bro. Like, my first year going across the water was going to London.
Right.
And it's like, you get over there, it's like, man, football really took me this far. So, it's just all about perspective, you know what I'm saying? Mm. So, I think it's pretty cool. And I ain't got a problem with it.
Right on, man. That's great. Yeah. All right. Carl, you lived in Germany, man.
I did, man. And look, and I think it's cool, the NFL, we used to say this, like, for years it was just England, right? It was just London. And they were like, well, when are they going to play somewhere else? And now it's Spain.
Right.
You know, they're playing in Brazil.
Hi, yeah. Poppy.
Right. Yeah, right. So it's crazy to see the journey of where everybody's going. You watching your college squad at all, man? You watching UCF?
I try to keep up. If anything, I'll catch the highlights and the scores. But as far as watching live, it's been a little slow. But I'm still supporting from wherever I'm at.
For Scott Frost is back to just beat Belichick, man.
Yeah, that was exciting to see.
we all enjoyed that.
Mike Hughes, man, good luck this weekend. Brother, as I said, DeRaw, let's get back on the right track.
Yes, sir, for sure. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much,
man.
Thank you for having me. Yes, sir.
That's Mike Hughes, guys, here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, and like I was saying before, the best thing about Mike Hughes so far is I haven't really heard his name all that much, meaning that he's probably been pretty good for the most part, because positions like cornerback and offensive line, the less you hear about those guys is the better. 404-726-0929 is the number to get involved. It's been a really special day here on 92.9 The Game. Just wanted to say thank you to everybody who checked in, everybody who called on the phones, at 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929, and hit me up on Twitter at C Thomas Radio. Shattered all kinds of records for engagement today online, so this was a really cool one to be a part of. And listen, I get the passion, I get the energy, I get the fervor, and I understand exactly where this squad is right now. Again, I moved here in 2020, and I've watched every snap of every Falcons game since then as part of my job here on 92.9 The Game. Right now, it feels like more of the same. It feels like we're on a roller coaster that's just spinning round and round and round, maybe more like a carousel. But there's a chance on Sunday for this team to be able to not correct everything, but at least show us that this team is headed in the right direction. And we'll see.